Hello.
Linda.
Andy.
Linda.
Andy.
How are you, friend?
I'm good. Got a muggy today.
It's a storm brewing down here in Baltimore.
I bet we're about to get it.
Got some rain coming.
Yeah. That's what it feels like.
How are things up in New York?
Pretty good. Muggy. Walking Lenny down to the groomer at the moment.
How often do you take that little mop to the groomer?
It's every couple months. I try to get him to cut it pretty short. And then the problem is that his face hair grows up into his eyeballs. So this is more of like a maintenance trim where they just cut his face hair.
So you can actually see things?
Yeah, exactly.
I love how we've bred dogs into oblivion. They're so useless right now. They used to be wolves. They used to be powerful apex predators. And now it's like, please give me a professional haircut, otherwise I cannot see.
Right. I need a $100 grooming.
Oof, a cool $100, huh?
Also squeeze out my anal glands because I can't do that myself anymore either.
That's a good one. That one's worth $100 probably.
Yeah. So many things.
Now, is that, I assume that's a service you tip on? You tip on your dog grooming or no?
Yes, question mark? I think so.
Yeah, it seems like a thing you would tip on. I would tip on dog grooming if we ever got Sadie groomed. But she's not really groom worthy. You know, she's just a sloppy girl.
Yeah.
We're having a fun... Gross. Sadie's behaving weirdly. We have a bunch of construction going on behind our house, which you know about. Right out our back door. Same back door that Sadie loses her mind if the mail carrier comes within 10 yards of.
Yeah.
She defends the house with a vicious passion. And yet, right now, there's like a crew of like six guys right out our back door making a bunch of noise, and Sadie is not just standing at the door barking at them. I think...
Weird.
I think there's so many of them, she's like, we're overrun. I can't defend us anymore. If I yell at them, they might attack. I don't know what to do. And she's just paralyzed.
Yeah. Well, okay, because we had a similar thing with Lenny, where they were ripping out our sidewalk and replacing all of the stones. And there was like a crew of, like four or five dudes out there. And normally, like, all that you have to do is like barely touch our gate so that it squeaks. And he's like, but for these dudes to be out there all day, he just sat in the window and watched them.
Wild.
Just looking at them.
Sadie's like, very not watching them. I think Sadie is afraid of them because she's mostly standing away from the doors and windows in other rooms looking especially anxious.
Daddy, are the murderers going in?
but she's given up her defense of the house plan. She's like, you know what? This is above my pay grade. Look how many of them there are. I can't get involved.
Exactly. She's like, I'm getting old. I'm just a little girl.
Pretty funny.
Pretty funny.
we debriefed, off air, and it's really interfere with our podcasting vibe. Our listeners don't know how your time off is going because you haven't filled them in yet.
I actually cried a lot yesterday.
Yeah, it was a crying day.
I think it was important.
Sometimes you need one of those, you know.
Yeah. Remember those two ladies at XOXO who gave that talk about burnout?
I sure do.
There for them. Yeah. What are their names?
Oh, I don't remember them that much.
Well, recently they were on the Brené Brown podcast, and they were kind of, repeating similar stuff that was in the... I just walked by a really interesting makeshift wheelchair elevator.
Okay,
I'm impressed.
I'm glad that ended with elevator. I think I'm glad it ended with elevator. If it was a makeshift wheelchair, I'd be a little alarmed somebody didn't have access to a non-makeshift wheelchair. But now I'm wondering if I should feel the same way about a wheelchair elevator. I feel like those should not be hacked together is my feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I just walked by something that was very like specific to the house, to someone's needs. And I'm glad that they were able to build that. And you're also like, there's a gap in the market here.
Or a gap in the amount of money that something costs, probably. And yeah.
Right, exactly. But anyways, so they talk about how
emotions are a thing that have a beginning, middle, and end. You remember this?
I do.
And it's like a tunnel, and you have to go all the way through it. And so I think, like, for the last couple days or the last week or whatever, I feel like I've had the beginning of a lot of thoughts and feelings over and over again.
You just keep seeing the entrance to that tunnel?
Yes.
Feeling the cold air rushing out of it?
Or it's like I'm in the tunnel, but I'm just like not, I don't have time for this. I can't go all the way through this tunnel. You know?
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Or you talk yourself out of it, like, what am I being such a big baby about? Like, I have a great job. I have a new job lined up. Everything is great. I don't know, like talking yourself out of the right to have the feeling, basically, where you're just like, how could I possibly? I'm so lucky.
That is a pattern I have definitely observed among the woke, privileged folks in my life, of which I count myself among. It's very hard sometimes to allow yourself to feel your feelings when you are so consciously aware of how, by all practical matters, you're doing great, and right. Therefore you shouldn't be allowed to feel bad about it. It's hard to talk yourself out of that.
Right, exactly. I was talking to another friend who will remain anonymous, who has a really great job right now, but is being underpaid, and they used to work at Walmart, making like considerably less. And what that does to people who have had to like work their way up, you know, kind of like this feeling of like, who am I to complain about my salary? I'm like so lucky to be where I am. But then like, you know, other people in the same position are getting paid twice as much. And so that's how you stay in that place, is like this guilt and the way that capitalist structures take advantage of people and take advantage of that human emotion, which is like really fucked up.
I think we all get to be mad about how much money we make when there are so many billionaires in the world. I think everybody gets to be mad about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you're starting this new job. You make quite a bit more money than me. I'm mad on your behalf, though, Linda. You should make even more money, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Everybody should make more money.
Or it's not even about the money. We should have access to the shit we need, whether that shit is
our roof over our heads or, like, mental health.
Yeah. Time off, maybe, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the only way to translate those needs to any kind of fungible format is money. But, yes, that is, at the core of it, what everybody ought to have in a world where there are fucking billionaires. Everybody should get to take some time off and, you know, not be made to feel guilty about it.
Great.
Yeah, so yesterday was a crying day because I think I
have been having all these feelings, but I haven't, like, allowed myself to articulate them yet. And so Mark made me dinner, which was very sweet, and I was sitting there and just started to explain how I felt, and tears. Lots and lots of tears.
That can be good, though.
Yeah. No, it was good. It was definitely a release, but, you know, and then you have the issue as a partner where you're like, my partner is crying and let's fix this. And so, you know, since what I'm dealing with is like some semblance of burnout, I'm not like as burnt out as I've been in the past, but in these breaks, you realize like,
oh, shit, I'm tired.
And, yeah. And, you know, like, I don't think you should, similarly, I don't think you should compare to past burnout and minimize today's burnout, right?
Right, exactly.
Like, you know, so crying while describing your feelings over dinner, that's a pretty significant amount of burned out, Linda.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, doing that, he's trying to help and, you know, problem solve. And he's like, you don't even have to take a job. Like, you can not work. And I'm like, that's not the point. And also, like, of course I have to work.
that's the whole thing. That's the whole trap. Until you've made your Bezos billions, you're not one of the lucky ones who gets to just stop working.
That was one of the hardest things for me to learn in my relationship, was to stop problematizing and solvematizing everything.
Right.
Because that is my natural response, is to try and solve things. But
right.
It is actually, I found, very infrequently something that adults need help with. Like, you know everything that Mark knows, practically. Like, he's not telling you anything new when he says, actually, everything's fine, and, you know, you could take some time off. Like, you know what you could do. Exactly. That's not the problem. The problem
I know what
is
I could
this...
do, and I've made a calculated choice.
Right.
And
so if anything, it's like that's Brett is like questioning your choice at this point when you're, you know, you're having a big feeling about your choice because you, you know, made all those calculations and are doing what you have to do. And the attempt to help actually kind of comes across as like, are you sure you made the right choice? And it's like, well, shut up. Be supportive.
Right. So I still feel like I made the right choice, and I am also feeling feelings about work in general, and I'm going to walk around this jackhammer situation. That's fun.
That's at my house. I don't like yesterday. That's why we couldn't record.
Yeah. I'm glad we waited so that you could get my jackhammering sounds.
I like to collect a variety of jackhammering sounds from all over the world.
You could be a gaffer. Make a bunch of sounds for a living. Like, got them all locked and loaded.
I have genuinely considered trying my hand at some light voice acting work.
Oh, Andy!
Yeah, maybe not even acting, but like voice over stuff. You know, there's like a whole market of people where it's like, you just want to record stuff. I'm good at reading stuff into a microphone. I can do that.
I can see you on an AT&T commercial.
I don't know. I'm not sure I would get that far, but you know. Read some stuff. Why not?
Hey, shoot for the moon, Andy.
That's my dream is to hawk some fucked up, monopolized service from a cellular company that just bleeds all of its customers dry. Yeah, that's what I want
to
do.
Hey, do what you gotta do to get yours.
Yeah.
No shade. So yesterday I felt like I walked through the tunnel of the feelings.
Oh, you got through yesterday.
I feel like I woke up today with a different perspective, which means, yes, I think I'm at least somewhere towards the end of the tunnel. Because for days, I was just thinking, like, I can't work. How could I ever work again? I'm so tired. Like, just seeing, like, the Slack icon on Mark's computer, I was like, oh.
Yeah, it's like, it's haunting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little notification bubbles, blips and bloops.
Yeah, so I think the trick is, like, knowing all of these things and also continuing to choose, knowing that, yeah, I will start this new job and I'll be very happy. I'll make a lot of new friends. It'll be fun. Lots of it will be rewarding. And I'll still be serving capitalism. And that's okay.
Yep.
Because I'm very lucky to be where I am. Da, 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 da. Da, da, da.
I am growing more and more skeptical of the idea of burnout, or rather, I guess, am I growing more skeptical that the concept of burnout sufficiently describes the widespread experience I have felt and seen all of my friends and peers feel in today's world. It's like, oh, you just worked a little too much. You just got to chill out and, you know, stop working so much. And it's like, I think this is much bigger than just that.
I'm glad you're saying this because it's never felt right to me. Like that and imposter syndrome. Like those two ideas, when people say them, I'm like, is that what it is? You know, like, and I've had some designers constantly talking about burnout, but I think it's like, yeah, I continue saying what you're saying because I feel like,
well, the other thing I don't really like about either of those terms is that they put the onus on the person. It's like burnout. Like you got burned out. Like you got all used up. Like why'd you use up all your stuff? You should have, you know, rationed it better. Or you should have, you know, just been more prepared and, you know, flagged this thing earlier. And like fundamentally, I think it's true, obviously. Like I do think that people are burned out. But this like cycle of burnout and then I guess you like either have a breakdown or you take some space finally, or you change something dramatically in your life and then you're immediately on the path to burnout again.
Right. It's always this pendulum effect. I think that's why like Burning Man is such a big deal, because it's close to San Francisco where all these people like just work their asses off all year long. And then they go and do the exact opposite of that to undo it.
Right, they have to go as far in the extreme opposite direction as possible. It's like,
right, gonna literally
in order to counteract 11 and a half months of just tic-tacking away on my little keyboard all day to make the numbers go up and make the graphs look good. I need to go rip off all my clothes, get sprayed by the taint rinser, and go to the orgy tent and just like full bacchanal.
Yep. Exactly.
Until that becomes too much, and then people are like, well, now I need a whole year of that. And then they take that sabbatical that they blog about. And yeah, so yes.
I also feel like describing it as burnout makes it sound like it is this thing that has these peaks, which I think it does for a lot of people, but I also am very conscious of, like, I have not ever really had, like, a breakdown. We talked last week's show about how I have not taken a break any longer than a week since I started working. So I also haven't had a huge break. I've never had, like, a big time off to, like, really recharge. When I took a week off just, a month ago, to do something other than work every single day. I think I remember telling you that, like, the very first morning back at work, I, like, had a mildly stressful meeting, and immediately I was like, yep, I feel just exactly the same as I did.
Yeah, like,
I felt
yeah.
better for about 2 hours of the first day back at work, and then I was like, yeah, now I'm back at the same place I was at before.
Exactly.
And so it's just, like, I don't know if it counts as burnout when it's just constant and ever-present.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And we just get ourselves used to, like, a different way of experiencing life. Like, oh, it's normal that I have, like, a stomachache every day at 2 p.m. or whatever. You know,
right.
Like, everyone's bodies shows it in a different way.
And I think, like, when you get away from it and you have that vacation, it just shows you, like, oh, wow, this is different.
Yeah, I mean, the most tired I am every day is, like, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Every day at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I could lay down and sleep soundly for like 2 hours. I'm more tired then than I am at midnight, you know, when I'm trying to fall asleep in my bed. It's so cruel and unusual. And yeah, the fact that I can't really just sleep in the middle of the afternoon. I mean, I probably could try and wing it actually, but
yeah.
I don't know. The whole world is oriented towards not that. It makes makes everything but that hard. Like, the real problem is, I don't think that people are getting burned out. The problem is that the entirety of society is oriented to constantly be burning everyone out nonstop.
To get the most out of people.
And, like, that's the problem. We need, like, one layer of remove from burnout. Burnout's not the problem. Burnout is a symptom. The problem is whatever this thing is that is causing constant widespread burnout among people that, you know, to your earlier point, like, are in a perfectly comfortable economic situation. They don't want for any of their, like, you know, any of the lower floors on their Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Like, they are not in danger of, like, losing everything in a moment. I mean, a lot of people are, right? And it's very relevant for them, too. But the fact that this is even felt by everybody else, something I'm very conscious of that I've told my therapist before is, like, I get very absorbed and stressed out about things at work sometimes. But if you fast forward 6 months, can I even remember the thing that I was stressed out about? Like, I've been recording podcasts for years, and sometimes I'll listen back to some of the early episodes of my first podcast, and the beginning of that show was always just, you know, us talking about our weeks, and I'd be like, I had a really busy week, this was going on, it was really nuts, blah, 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 blah. And even, like, 2 months later, I'm like, what was happening that week? I'm hearing these words come out of my mouth, and I literally can't even remember what had me so preoccupied, because it was ultimately completely trivial and didn't matter at all, and that is true of all of these things. I don't know. I'm blabbering now, but I feel it, Linda. I feel you. I see you. I know where you're coming from. And yeah, I think it is very real, even though you are ostensibly fine and doing great and have a great job and should be very proud and, you know, comfortable. I understand that does not minimize any of these feelings.
Right, but I think to tack on to what you're saying, like, last night when I'm trying to just articulate my emotions, I wasn't just talking about the last 3 years of this one job, because I do think that, like, the job that I just had was pretty work-life balance-y.
Yeah.
You know, compared to all the rest. Like, what I was describing to Mark was just, like, an accumulation of years. You know, I was recalling stuff that happened to me, like, in 2013.
Yeah.
That I was, like, still feeling the effects of.
And I don't even think it's work-life balance related all the time. Like, I have a great work-life balance. I fucking never work after 5 p.m. ever.
Yeah.
I have never done it, like, pretty much ever. It's, like, so, so rare. Maybe once a year I have to do something after 5 p.m., and it's usually pretty trivial. Yeah. So, like, it's not that work is encroaching on my regular life and I don't have a regular life. It's that the emotional experience of knowing that this treadmill is like unending is a weight that outpaces the actual work itself. Like the right. emotional experience of the work is much bigger and scarier than the work itself.
Yeah, exactly. When I was in Atlanta, my brother-in-law and I were talking about like just career paths. Because they're asking Carson like what she wanted to be when she grew up, that kind of stuff, and like she said doctor. And then back to that, Dan was just like, man, could you imagine going to school, like being in school for like 7 to 9 years, just to be in a ton of student debt? And I think that like that was definitely my idea of going that career path route until I was in tech. And then I'm like, I mean, I basically just did the same thing. Like, spent the first, you know, 10 years of my career giving all of my energy to something and being extremely tired by it. So it's, you know, maybe kind of the same as like going to medical school, although I didn't get a degree. I just got a bunch of like logos on my resume. And I'm like, yeah, but once you're a doctor, then it's just kind of like you can kind of set up your practice or whatever and like not coast, but you can like the fighting is over at a certain point. And I was like, what's going to happen to us when we're in like our 40s, 50s, 60s and we still need to work because our country doesn't like take care of people very well in their retirement years. And you can't just say, maybe we can. Like, maybe you don't have friends of the web still when you're 68 and you're
Linda. Oh, big oofs.
Does any of this like resonate with you at all?
Yes. Curious. Of course it does. And like related, something I've been feeling is that I'm gently involved with the Baltimore chapter of the DSA, and we have the General Assembly elections coming up next month. And I really like the DSA, I like the work they do, I think our chapter is good, but people are overextended, myself included. Like, we need people to run for, like, leadership positions in the organization, and, like, I was like, I can't emotionally do it, you know? And so it's like, ultimately what I'm saying is, I don't have time, emotionally, physically, to help do a small part to fix the problems that are going to result in when I'm 68 years old, living in a country that does not take care of people, and I'm still on this goddamn treadmill because that's what we decided was the most important thing in, like, you know, after World War II, it was like, all we have to do now is just I'll get on this treadmill and run forever, and we'll be the greatest country ever, and everyone will live amazingly. It's, I don't know. It's, I think about it a lot, and it's hard. It's very hard, Linda.
Yeah. It's very hard and annoying.
Here's a question for you. This is another one of these like put things in context tropes. And
hey, hold on. I'm about to be at the doctor in place. Can you pause the recording?
Yeah, I certainly can.
And then ask you a question.
All right. So pause the recording. And we're back. Lenny,
we're back.
Getting a haircut, getting his teeth brushed, I hear. I heard you basically point to some other dog and say, give me what that dog has. I want that cut.
Yeah, because it's always such a thing. They're like, how short do you want it? And I'm like, I don't know, short.
Yeah, like, what are the options here? Not
and then they pointed,
bald.
They pointed to a swatch of dog hair and was like, which of these lengths? And I pointed to the one that I wanted, and they're like, oh no, you don't want that one.
Wait. You were pointing at swatches of dog hair on like a dog hair length like display?
Yeah, like imagine little paint chips that it's like dog hair length, which I think was fucking brilliant.
But then you pointed at one and they said, no, not that one.
Yeah, exactly. It was fucking brilliant until they were like, oh no, trust us, you don't want that one.
Sounds like their whole system is not working if they believe it's not accurately communicating to you what the dog's going to look like.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, why don't you just do whatever the fuck you want? I don't care.
Ask him what he wants.
See. Yeah, exactly. Who are you, Lenny? Who are you?
Oh, Leonard the dog. Getting groomed.
All right, do you remember the question you were going to ask?
Oh, yeah. Okay, great. This is a good place to restart because it's kind of a little bit of a non sequitur. But it's an interesting thought experiment that frames the like cultural stress that we all feel despite everything being ostensibly fine. I say fine in like the burning dog or the dog sitting in the burning house style. But the question is, Linda, if you could give up your current life right where you are today and instead live as one of the richest people in the world at like the turn of the century, like an Andrew Carnegie or, you know, somebody like that.
Oh, wow.
You still get to be you. And let's say like all your friends and stuff come with you. So like you're not weighing all of your current friends and social connections against random people you don't know in the 1900s. You're weighing the lifestyle of you, right. Linda, get to have a Nintendo Switch, get to have internet, get to do all that kind of stuff. Or would you rather be one of the richest, and you get, yeah, you don't get to take the penicillin back. No, you have to live in, you know, turn of the century, whatever. Or do you want to be, you know, the richest person back then? What do you think? What jumps out at you about this question?
Well, I have a fascination for old-timey times, you know?
How old-time are we talking?
Well, I think turn of the century is, like, a time that I really... I worked at that bar when I was in college that was, like, themed like it was the turn of the century. And they had all this, like, old music playing.
Turn of the century, we're talking, like, prior Roaring Twenties, prior World War One. You mean that kind of theme?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a restaurant themed of that era. I see a lot of, like, 50s themed restaurants. I don't see a lot of that kind of era of themed restaurants.
It's a stupid chain restaurant. It's Ted's. You might have heard of it.
I have definitely not heard of it, but I'm going to Google it right now.
So Ted Turner owns it.
Ted Turner owns it?
Yeah, it's called Ted.
I'm going to Google Ted Turner's restaurant. I actually don't know who Ted Turner is. I just know this is the name of a celebrity.
Yeah, he's buddies with the guy who started, like, Longhorn Steakhouse and stuff.
Ted's Montana Grill? Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, and so he started it because he bought up all that land to, like, repopulate the bison population. And then he actually, like, overdid it, and there was too much bison. And so he started this restaurant to offload the bison. So they serve, like, bison steaks and bison burgers.
Are you fucking kidding me?
And it's all themed like an old-timey saloon from the turn of the century. So, like, but they really go hard with the theme, like... Everything is only served in, like, glass Coke bottles, and they don't have, like, soda guns. You have to, like, open a glass bottle every time you want to, like, mix a drink. They don't have, like, freezers for the food because they, like, cook everything from scratch. But I don't even know if they're, like, still a thing. But, yeah, I worked there when I was in college. I was a bartender. But the one that I worked at was in Ted Turner's building, and it was, like, the flagship store where they, like, tried out all the recipes.
The flagship. The flagship grill restaurant. Yeah.
But it was like, and because of that, it did kind of feel more like a family-owned business because, like, the owner was in there all the time and, like, it wasn't, you know, we weren't, like, doing all the chain protocol stuff. It was more of, like, an experimental place to try things or whatever. But, yeah, so...
So you've had a taste of this lifestyle. You've had a taste of the turn of the century lifestyle when you were a bartender at Ted's Montana Bar and Grill.
Yeah, and everything was a little bit harder. Like, we weren't allowed to buy mixes, so I had to, like, hand make lemonade from scratch every day, and, like, even our sour mix and our Bloody Mary mix. But I had to, like, make everything from scratch. Everything was a little harder. But I actually, like, took pride in all of those little things, and, like, I really kind of liked how everything wasn't just, like, stuck in a freezer and everything, like, had to be, like, cared for, taken, like, a little bit more seriously. And I loved the old-timey music, and, yeah, I really liked it.
All right, so what's your choice then? What are you going to take? Are you going to go back to the turn of the century and live like a filthy rich person?
I think if I had a chance to live in both, like, take it. It's like, if you have a chance to go to space and be one of the few people who's done that, take it.
Yeah, but to be clear, like, you're not going there and then getting that experience and then getting to come back and share it at all, right? And nobody you're with is gonna know that this is all new to you. And the newness is gonna wear off. Like, it's gonna be new for what? A year? Conservatively? Like, at most, it'll be a year of, like, wow, this is fun and new, and then it's just your life.
Andy, it'll just be like Seinfeld. Like, all the problems... that exist before cell phones. Like, I want those problems.
So you're taking it.
I want to live in a world where you have to, like, introduce yourself to someone if you want to meet them face to face. I'd take it in a heartbeat, I think.
In a heartbeat, you say? So you're going to give up. You're going to give up all modern conveniences, right? You're not going to have any of the video games, any of the internet, obviously. You're also giving up, like, a big one for me is, like, you're giving up access to, like, the global marketplace in the sense of, like, you know, you're not going to get, you don't get Chinese food.
As you're saying this, a truck with WB Mason's face on it went by. Just Google his face.
Oh, I've seen the man's face.
Since 1898. It's a fucking sign, Andy. I'm going back in time.
All right, here we go.
I'm doing it.
You're not going to get access to the global marketplace. You're not going to have Chinese food, sushi, any of that ever again. You're just going to eat like...
In the world. I'm like a Rockefeller. Also, you got to remember, you're talking to me right now while I'm in New York. Like, one of the coolest places to be during the turn of the century. I would fucking love that.
You're also... We're not going to get to be... I mean, I'm going to exist in this timeline again because you're not giving up your social connections, but... I live in Baltimore.
Right.
We're not going to get to talk like this.
Well, get on the choo-choo train.
Same with all of your other friends that are at far-flung places. You have a broad social network all over the world that you have built over the years. You're not going to have the same kind of connection with them. You're going to be much more connected to the people in your physical life and much less connected to everybody through any of these communication channels.
Andy, I just deleted all my social apps, and I am so much happier. Like, you just have to... be a fucking person and go hang out with people. And how do they talk to each other? Like telegraph or like tippy tap?
I think at the turn of a century, the richest people probably had telephones. So you could maybe call the other richest people in the world, maybe. But
here's what we would do. We would invent the podcast.
There we go.
I would have delivered to you by airmail or Pony Express or whatever they delivered the mail with back then.
I'm looking at the history of the telephone now. Okay, so by 1904, there were 3 million telephones in the United States. So suffice it to say, in the turn of the century, the richest people definitely had a couple of those. Probably also some of the not richest people. So there could be some telephone calls still.
On, like, those houses, like really old houses that have like the phone box in the wall.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have one of those.
Yeah, you could have whatever you want.
I'm so ready. When do I get to go?
All right. Well, I appreciate your answer. I'm glad that this was very illuminating. I think I understand more about you as a person, that you would go back immediately.
Yeah, and I also just think that with technology and all of the advancements that we've made, we've certainly made a lot of wonderful advancements. We're learning about all of the damages that we're making to our climate, and some of us are trying to do things to stop that. Yeah, there's a lot of good going on, but I think that mostly we've just revealed all of the worst parts of humanity as technology has advanced so fast, because we can't even keep up with it regulation-wise. So people are just... Like, we don't even know the harm that we're doing to ourselves right now. And we probably won't for another, like, 50 or 100 years.
I mean, that's true. That's also true at every point in history, though. It's just that it's the angle of the curve has become quite a bit magnified.
It is very steep right now. Like, I feel like we're in this exponential phase of, oh, we're really fucking it up, man.
I think, like, it's not as steep now as it was, like, 15 years ago. I think 15 years ago was peak, like... What the fuck is going on? Everything is changing. And now I actually think what we're kind of in the phase of is actually coming to terms with all the shit that changed in the last 10 to 20 years. And we're actually starting to recognize it because we have a little bit of time in this little plateau of technology where, like, I mean, the biggest technological innovations of the past, like, 10 years are what? Like, VR, deepfakes, Bitcoin. Like, none of that shit really matters all that much, I don't think. So I think it's actually like we're in this little space where we get to really think for a little bit and feel for a little bit how fucking wild everything got, 20 years ago, and we're just now coping with it a little bit.
Exactly.
All right, Linda. Well, thank you for playing this this game. I will I'll be sure to send you back in time as you requested. I hope you don't get polio or have a cavity or something. It's gonna be really unpleasant to go to the dentist.
But
the rest of things should be pretty okay. Don't forget, super rich.
They'll put me on, like, some straight up meth or something.
Yeah, they're just gonna give you pure opium to deal with your filling that they're gonna put in. The filling will be made of tin or whatever, but you're gonna get some wild ass drugs.
Oh, there is a really great show on like BBC or something about doctors during that time.
and like doing those like stadium emergency like surgeries where like 60% of the time the patient dies.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun for you to try to explain to some doctor that's like putting leeches all over you, like, actually this doesn't work, and they're gonna be like, excuse me, woman, you're a woman and I'm a doctor, so you're hysterical. We need to give you lots of orgasms. That's how we're gonna solve this problem.
And I'll be like, you know what, I'm not mad about that.
Bring on the medical vibrator.
But here we go. I signed up for this.
All right, Linda.
All right, Andy.
I have to get back to work. I have to get back to the grind. Because that's.
I have to get back to nothing.
You have to get back to. You're in the same place personally right now with your little career. That I didn't mean little career as in like your.
Yeah,
I meant this little subset of your career. This small subset.
We're not back in time yet. You don't get to talk to me like that until it's night.
I'm not infantilizing you. I meant a small subset of your career. I'm saying you're at the same place where like you like were in the shit while you were working, and now you have this space to like think about it, just like we as a society have the space for these like last 10 years to think about what the fucking internet did to us. You are all of a sudden like, wait a minute, that shit was fucked up. Everything I've been doing is fucked. This is fucked. This is wildly fucked.
Exactly.
I love you, Linda.
I love you, Andy.
Have a good time reminiscing, and I'm always here if you want to chat. You know my number.
Thanks, bud.
Bye-bye.
Bye.